Now we can go to work. The record will show that it is a little after 1:30 p.m., September 23rd, 2009. The time and date stipulated for a pre-hearing conference in the matter of the application of Otter Tail Power Company's annual filing for renewable cost recovery factor, case number PU-08-742, and also in the matter of the application of Otter Tail Power Company for authority to increase rates for electric utility service in North Dakota, case number PU-08-862. The record will further show that I am Al Wall, an administrative law judge designated by the Office of Administrative Hearings pursuant to the request of the Public Service Commission to serve as the hearing officer for this case. Mr. Gerhardsen, will you state your appearance for the record, please?
Yes, Bruce Gerhardsen. Gerhardsen spelled G-E-R-H-A-R-D-S-O-N, Associate General Counsel for Otter Tail Power Company.
Mr. Savickle.
Richard Savickle with the Fellhaber Law Firm on behalf of the large industrial consumers.
And Ms. Bendish.
Annette Bendish on behalf of Public Service Commission Advocacy Staff.
And Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
Ilana Jeffcoat-Sacco, Commission Advisor.
Let me start, Council, I think, to address what appears to be the pivotal question for us. And that is the way that we should conduct the hearing. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, did we get any advice from the commissioners?
Two commissioners responded to my email, and neither one had any problem with appearing by phone.
Right. All right. With that in mind, here's how I suggest that we proceed with the hearing. This hearing, in my view, in my understanding, is a regular hearing in accordance with the commission rules, and notice has been published in the usual form. I think that the hearing in these circumstances is a record not only for the commission, but for the public. I think that there must be sufficient testimony to provide a basic understanding of the proposals which the commission will approve. That is, I think there has to be testimony evidence which addresses the issues which the commissioners are to decide for the hearing. I understand that there's a stipulated settlement. But to the extent that the hearing is for the approval of that settlement and is a public hearing in accordance with the commission rules, that I think the evidence that must come in by testimony needs to address the issues set forth in the notice to be decided by the commission. And I think you have to do that by testimony, because to do otherwise denies the public access to the hearing. That is, if we only offer stipulated testimony and then say, does anyone have any questions? That is, do any of the commissioners have any questions? The public is quite at a loss to have any idea what the hearing is about or to have any understanding of the evidence that addresses the issues to be decided. Now, I don't think that means that everyone for whom pre-file testimony has been filed needs to testify. I also agree, as long as the commissioners have no objection, that witnesses may testify by telephone. That is, both in accordance with the commissioner's rules, the rules of administrative hearings, as well as the statute. As long as there's no objection to telephone testimony, and even if, well, there isn't going to be an objection to telephone testimony in this case, so there isn't any problem. But I do think there has to be testimony to provide a basic, to provide a basis to address the issues. Now, I also think in the course of that testimony, there isn't any reason why a witness can't summarize the basis why he or she supports the stipulated settlement, and then, as part of his or her testimony, refers to a pre-filed testimony, the statement of a witness that was filed as pre-filed testimony, taking the points, the relevant and salient points from that testimony to support his or her testimony, and say it was on this basis that I believe such and such, or I concluded such and such, whatever the facts are that that counsel think needs to be offered. And then I think that testimony can be offered. And I think also in the course of the hearing, if any commissioner has a question of a witness who is testifying and the witness is at a loss to provide a direct or sufficient or unable to provide a sufficient response to the question, I think as frequently as we all know frequently happens in the course of a hearing, the witness can say, well, so-and-so is better able to provide that information to respond to that question, later on in the course of the hearing, that person can be contacted by telephone, sworn, and respond to the question. Now, generally, I think Otter Tail should go forward. Otter Tail has the burden. The large industrial users should follow. Whether or not they have any questions, they may not. Or they may wish to expand upon some point, whatever it takes, and followed, of course, by the commission advocacy staff. And around we go again until everybody has has asked all the questions that they want to ask. I agree. I can't imagine there will be any cross-examination, but it does provide everyone an opportunity to utilize the resources of whatever witness is offered by whatever party at the time. And for the commissioners, then, the important thing for the commissioners to follow up with questions once they have a basic understanding. That is, I guess we ought not to presume any more than we would presume public attendance that the commissioners have necessarily read any pre-filed testimony. So it seems to me to make a useful hearing, this is as important for the commissioners as it is necessary for the public. Now, nor do I have any difficulty at the end of the hearing if if all of the pre-filed testimony that counsel thinks is relevant and necessary for the commissioner's review of the stipulated settlement isn't offered in the course of witness testimony, I don't think there's any problem with scooping up that additional evidence at the close or at the end of the hearing or at the end of the, let me rephrase that, at the conclusion of the party's presentation and simply offer that to pursuant to stipulation. I just don't think that that pre-filed testimony can be a substitute for the essential facts that should be put in front of the commissioners and available to the public in lieu of testimony, which can be heard by the commissioners and the public at the hearing. Now, that's a rather longer speech than I intended to make, and I would also say that I'm less than convinced that that's exactly the way we ought to proceed. And so I welcome your response and your suggestions. Mr. Gerhardsen?
Yes, thank you, Judge. I think actually you've got it very close to what I would envision, and I appreciate your thoughtfulness on the subject. My sense is, one thing that maybe I should clarify about the pre-file testimony is we did only have one round of pre-file testimony. That is, Otter Tail filed its application, which included the usual direct testimony. Then we got the responsive testimony from both the interveners and the advocacy staff, and we immediately commenced settlement discussions and were very fortunate to arrive at a comprehensive settlement. So the one thing that we have in this instance is probably we've got, you know, we've staked out probably the furthest positions apart in our pre-file testimony, and there was no opportunity for rebuttal or anything like that where we'd start to begin to narrow the issues. So we end up maybe with, if all we had was the pre-file testimony, there'd be probably no discussion on how did we arrive at a compromise resolution that included all issues. So I agree with you very much that really to rely solely on those pieces of testimony is probably inadequate. I think it would leave many questions for commissioners, in fact. So I do think, though, that maybe our most – I'm thinking that Mr. Brouse, who's our sort of policy witness, might be able to sort of carry the water for Otter Tail along with me, if I can be permitted the maybe what I was thinking is sort of in the terms of an opening statement, myself giving a presentation which was the summary of the case, both as filed and then really probably more importantly, what was the settlement? What are the terms of the settlement and how do they work together? Then we put out Mr. Brouse to affirm that, explain that to the extent necessary, answer questions regarding how did we arrive at that settlement, should anyone have them. And then I was thinking more of the subject matter expert witnesses. By and large, the most important ones we have are going to be present live. They could take the stand, as you mentioned, to the extent necessary, where they would have to answer a question that Mr. Brouse himself couldn't answer, mining down into details somewhere. If that comports with sort of what your thoughts are, that works really well for me.
Well, let me respond to specifically. You're certainly entitled to, as you know, make an opening statement, and I frankly welcome opening statements. I don't see enough of them. I think they're very helpful. They're helpful to me. They're helpful to the commissioners, I think. Now, maybe the commissioners see it as a waste of time, but it certainly wouldn't be in this case. The only thing I caution you, and I don't need to, probably don't need to say this at all, but you understand, obviously, that your opening statement is not evidence, and I don't know how important it is in this case to make a record, maybe not so important, but at least, if you're concerned, that if you address facts, if you raise facts in your opening statements that then aren't followed up by witness testimony, technically you don't have that in evidence. Now, again, it'd be hard for me to envision how you're going to get an appeal out of this case or how this would ever be subject to further review. I don't know. I leave that to you. That's your problem, not mine. But with that caveat, sure, I think that's a good idea. I also wonder whether maybe some sort of a closing statement follows up your submission of your stipulated agreement. I'm not sure how you intend to proceed with that, and maybe some guidance from Ms. Jeff Goetz-Sacco. Are we going to have findings of fact, conclusions of law, and an order, or are you going to have just some kind of an order which picks up the agreement, or how are we going to proceed with that?
Well, we've had findings of fact, conclusions of law, and orders that have adopted settlements,
right,
because there are some things, and I guess we haven't really addressed that yet, and we would want the parties to, when they do their proposed decisions, to help us figure out whether we need it or not. But there are often times, especially in a rate case, where the commission does have to find something so that it can be the way the company does business for the next however many years till the next rate case. And even if that is addressed in the settlement, the commission may have to say, yes, from now on, for the next time you have interim rates or something, the return on equity is such and such. So we would be having those, and of course we would expect the parties to follow this hearing with proposals, which should be simple when they agree with everything, and perhaps one jointly agreed to proposal. But the parties would have to help us, at least advise us what their thoughts are on how much of that needs to be in findings and how much doesn't.
Well, and maybe the settlement agreement, as I recall, there is a signed, is there a signed settlement agreement in this case?
Yes, it's been docketed.
Right.
But not, you know.
Well, then, maybe, counsel, it's your case, not mine, but I would wonder whether that, you wouldn't simply mark that as an exhibit and file it, and then subsequent to the hearing, counsel can agree with the commission as to how they're going to draft this into an order, or what kind of an order they're going to have. And at that point, maybe you don't need a closing statement. On the other hand, I certainly wouldn't have any problem with a closing statement, which kind of wraps everything up and argues for the approval of the settlement agreement. But I leave that up to you. But that's generally how I see this. Anything further, Mr. Gerhardsen?
Well, yeah, I guess my sense was opening statement, but certainly could be more in terms of a closing, and that may not be that important either way to the way I'm viewing this. With respect to findings, I guess I can work with it, with Mr. Savakul and Ms. Bendish to work out, but I'm certain that we would come to an agreement, and I would think rather than try and rehash every term of our settlement agreement, we'd probably just incorporate it by reference.
Right. That, I expect that. This is Alana. But there may be some things that you need in findings.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think that's probably right. We will. There are a couple things in the settlement agreement because we had anticipated a process that would get approval sooner than this, where we had sort of a September 1st implementation date, I think was what was anticipated in the settlement agreement. And I guess Mr. Savakul and I have spoken about this. We filed a letter, in fact, in the Wind Rider case about that, that because of the, it's taking a bit longer than we anticipated, that the dates referenced there would actually change a bit. But I don't think there's really anything that would need to be addressed too specifically that would be contradictory to the settlement agreement other than that. Can I ask one other question of you, Judge? Would you mind if I made my either opening statement or closing argument in the form of a PowerPoint presentation? I just think sometimes that the complexity of these things can get some benefit out of having that visual support.
No, I don't. I that's acceptable. And it's up to you.
Okay, and then I'm more probably inclined to, and let me ask this of both you and maybe Ms. Jess Gotseko, whether if I were to make the presentation, then I would recognize, of course, that that isn't testimony, put Mr. Brous on the stand, say, and then really walk through it with him, but quickly, and basically get him to verify its contents under oath. Would that be adequate, at least for putting the summary material into the record?
I think it's adequate for the hearing as long as you have in mind that my concern that the public be informed.
Well, and I would hope that through my oral presentation and then Mr. Brouse's ratification of that, I think it would be more than a ratification. I don't want to just put him up there and say, did you hear what I said and do you agree with it? I don't mean to say that.
All right.
But I also don't want to be duplicative and have him just cover the same material again.
No, no. No, I think that's...
Then we have both, you know, a comprehensive discussion that is in summary form so people kind of see soup to nuts what the settlement includes. Then we would get it under oath through this ratification and summary by a competent witness.
Right. I think that's just fine.
Okay.
And I'm assuming, Mr. Gerhardsen, your PowerPoint presentation is going to be accompanied with usually I see a printout of each page or whatever, so that the PowerPoint presentation is part of the record then also.
I think so. Yes, that's
fine.
The intent is that we would offer that as an illustrative exhibit. Obviously, the contents of the settlement agreement speak for themselves.
Right. I'm comfortable with that. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
I have a question that might be helpful if we're thinking about the public, because I know we're not doing like video streaming or anything yet, but perhaps the PowerPoint would be available to get posted to our website so someone might be able to be looking at it while they're listening. That should be possible.
I have no problem with that. Is that something I could bring the day of the hearing? The one difficulty I'm having is... getting it done much ahead of time.
I don't think it can get posted that quickly, but I'm not 1,000% sure on that. But it was just a thought.
Let me see how quickly I can get it done. If I can, I would get it to you ASAP, of course.
If you just send it by email, we can get it posted.
Yeah. Okay. But it's something to shoot towards, I guess, if possible.
All right. Mr. Savicol, I haven't forgotten about you. This is... your chance to put your oar in.
And I'll just tell you what I will envision then for our presentation. It's my understanding parties, what we will have our witnesses available by phone, but it's my understanding that parties would stipulate to their pre-filed testimony into the record. And then I envision myself summarizing that testimony at a very high level, which would not include any additional facts other than what is in there, so as an introduction, and then offer my witnesses for questions or examination.
So your opening statement will, in effect, be a summary of the facts which support the portions of the stipulated settlement which pertain to the large industrial users.
Correct.
Right. I think that's workable. And, you know, again, it's your case, not mine, but understanding that your opening statement is not evidence, and that the evidence for the hearing will then be the pre-file testimony.
Correct.
Right.
And then, Your Honor, for copies, it's my understanding through conversations with Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco that the commissioners will have their own copies of our pre-filed testimony. We'll bring one for the record itself, and then additional copies that you want or
no, none for me, please. The only thing that I want to have on my desk are the exhibits.
Okay.
So I assume after you've made your opening your statement, at the conclusion of your opening statement, you're going to then offer the pre-filed testimony for your witnesses and invite the commissioner's questions based essentially on your opening statement. At that point, give the unless you've got them pre-marked, I really don't care whichever counsel wishes to do, but give your pre-filed testimony, which will be for the record, to me. I'll mark them, offer them, or you offer them pursuant to stipulation. I'll receive them. That's all I want from counsel.
Yeah. It's one set to be marked, but not any extra sets.
Right.
Oh, great.
We shouldn't need any extra.
Anything further, Mr. Savakul?
We had the one confidential.
I will get to that in a minute.
Okay.
I've got that on the bottom of my list.
Okay.
Anything further?
Not that I have, thank you.
Ms. Bendish?
Your Honor, staff is in a unique position because Mike Diller and Jerry Lean were not the ones that drafted our pre-filed testimony. It was a consultant that was hired that is no longer under contract and is actually unavailable for the hearing. However, Mike Diller will be available. I plan to put Mr. Diller on the stand, have him present an overview of the settlement and why staff agreed. Jerry Lean will also be available for rate design questions, but I don't anticipate having any direct with him, just tender the witness for cross-examination. And then we can stipulate to the pre-file testimony with the understanding that Mr. King is not here for cross-examination.
I don't have any problem with that. Mr. Gerhardsen, Mr. Savakul, I assume you have no problem with or advocacy staff's proposal?
No. None from Otter Tail.
Mr. Savakul?
No, none.
Yeah, okay. That works. That works for me. Ms. Jeffcoat Sacco, have I overlooked anything to this point?
Not to my knowledge.
All right, just on my list, and to address Mr. Savakul, the specific items that you suggested for the agenda. Do I understand then it's the plan for all of the parties simply to submit the form of the stipulated agreement as an exhibit? Mr. Gerhardsen?
Yes, I believe it is.
And Mr. Savakul?
Yes.
Ms. Bendish?
Yeah, that will be introduced through Mr. Gerhardsen's witness, correct?
Yes, I think that's fine for my opinion.
Yeah, I don't think it makes any difference, but just so it comes in, right, because that would then close it up for me. All right, I've got two items left. Which I've got on my notes here is housekeeping. I'd intended to address these at the hearing, and I will address them at the hearing because I want them to be part of the record of the hearing. We have, counsel, various references to these hearings as combined hearings and consolidated hearings. I don't want to, there has not been an order consolidating these hearings. I understand the commission's custom and practice, but in accordance with the rules of administrative procedure, I'm not sure there is a combined hearing. Be that as it may, what I propose, counsel, and what I consider to be satisfactory in the circumstances is that at the hearing, I will note the references to these hearings as combined and as consolidated hearings, and I will simply ask the parties to stipulate that all evidence received for the hearing shall be deemed received for both cases unless specifically offered and received for a particular case. Mr. Gerhardsen, do you have any objection to that procedure in this case?
No objection.
Mr. Savakul?
None.
Ms. Bendish?
No, Your Honor.
All right, then I will do that at some point and before we actually get down to opening statements. The second item, counsel, that I have is that I'm not as familiar with the file as I should be, but there was a question about trade secrets protection for certain filings in these cases. And I remember reviewing that with Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco some time ago, and I've again reviewed the file. And I, in as much as we treating these as combined or consolidated hearings, what I propose to do is make a ruling, if you will, an order as part of the hearing that the December 17, 2008 order granting trade secret protection for certain filings in case number 08742 is effective also for such filings in case number PU08862. Again, I think that is sufficient in the circumstances. It seems to me all but obvious as a matter of practice in these cases. But nevertheless, that is the way that I would proceed, counsel. Any objection, Mr. Gerhardsen?
None.
Mr. Savakul?
No, Your Honor.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
Ms. Bendish?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, that's what I would do, counsel, and otherwise that is the end of my list. Anything further, Mr. Gerhardsen?
Nothing from us, Your Honor.
Mr. Savakul?
We will have local counsel Joe Sitchie appear with us.
Oh, yes.
So you're aware of that. Your Honor, are you requiring or would you like us to file a notice of appearance for him or...
No, you know, I don't read the rule that way. I'm surprised that, you know, that rule is relatively new. And I'm surprised that rule was drafted the way it was. And I almost feel compelled to apologize for the necessity. But at least that seems to be the requirement of the rule. So all that I expect from Mr. Sitchie is his appearance. What the rule calls an appearance, a personal appearance, his introduction of you, I would recommend that he acknowledge the granting of the motion pro hoc vici, and then he should simply move to be excused for further proceedings. I'll ask for an objection. I can't imagine any will be forthcoming, in which case... Mr. Sitchie can take his leave.
Okay, thank you.
Right, anything further? Ms. Bendish,
anything
further, Ms. Bendish?
No, Your Honor.
Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco?
I do have one thing to bring up here at the end. I did have a commissioner stop in the office and wonder how he could forewarn Ottertail that he would be inquiring about a certain question, and I said I'd bring it up here. But the concern of whether this rate case includes any dollars expended on Big Stone 2. So Ottertail should be prepared to discuss that.
Okay. Thank you. We anticipated that. We will be prepared to discuss that.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Anything further? Anybody have any last thoughts? If not, thank you very much, counsel. This pre-hearing conference is concluded.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you all.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
What we do without you, we're going to miss you on the 27th of October when you're visiting your son.
Yeah, listen.
I'm assuming that's where you're
That's exactly where